It's 5:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Cynthia Schuster, filling in for Veronica Rickert. Coming up later in the program, we'll talk about the immigration principles being proposed by House Republicans and whether we could see immigration reform passed in the coming year.
First, over the past 5 years, there's been a dramatic increase in the number of sex offenders released from the state's Sand Ridge Secure Treatment Center in Mauston. WPR teamed up with the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism to find out why.
Gilman Halstead kicks off a three-part news series that examines what life is like for the inmates behind the razor wire fences at Sand Ridge and how the patients there prepare for reintegration into the community.
Since the law was passed 20 years ago, the state has committed about 500 such offenders known as sexually violent persons. Two-thirds of them are still locked up at Sand Ridge. Deborah McCulloch is the director of the treatment center.
We are treating a very small percentage of sex offenders in Wisconsin, and that small percentage are the highest or most likely to reoffend in their lifetime.
For an offender to wind up at Sand Ridge, they have to be diagnosed with a mental disorder and a criminal history that makes it more likely than not that they will commit a new crime. Once an offender is committed to Sand Ridge, psychologists evaluate his progress in treatment each year and use historical data on recidivism to determine his risk level. Over the past 5 years, 114 have been released compared to only 31 in the previous five-year period. Staff at the center say the increase is partly due to the effectiveness of the treatment program. Lloyd Sinclair is in charge of community programs at Sand Ridge. He says only 5 of the 67 patients released between 1994 and 2010 have committed new sex crimes.
If we can have the kind of reoffense rates that we have with patients who've been out 4 or 5 years, we feel some sense of confidence, particularly how high risk our patients are. The evidence is of those who've been released, the treatment program has been beneficial.
But the increased releases are also driven by new data that show how often released sex offenders commit new crimes, and that rate has gone down nationally. Now the current patients at Sand Ridge are considered less likely to reoffend. Under a new state law signed in December, most offenders released from Sand Ridge will be under strict supervision. Take Larry. He was released this month after serving 19 years for sexual assault, more than 10 of them at Sand Ridge after completing his original prison sentence. Sand Ridge officials ask that we only use patients' first names. He's living in Rock County right now and still going to weekly therapy sessions, but he still can't walk the streets of his neighborhood without an escort.
Right now, I have activities such I can go out, have certain people come and pick me up, or I can do grocery shopping, clothing shopping, those sorts of things. But inside my home, I do a lot of studying, especially religious studying. I do a lot of exercising, just little things to try to keep myself busy. There's not much that I can do as of right now of getting out because of the way the law is written.
Even with the restrictions, Larry says for him, there are some pluses to being on supervised release.
I didn't want to live on the street or under a viaduct or something like that. I have a support team that is willing to help me get back on my feet, even though it's a process that I have to go through and these restrictions I got.
Sometime in early February, Larry will get a chance to visit with his family for the first time since his release. Gilman Halstead, Wisconsin Public Radio.
In part two of this series, we'll take a harder look at the costs and benefits of releasing reformed sex offenders versus keeping them locked up, and how patients there are preparing themselves to get out and stay out. Meanwhile, you can see the full report beginning Sunday at wisconsinwatch.org and in newspapers around the state. It's one of the closest relationships two people can have, but only a very few people ever get to experience it. Being a twin can be a rewarding life experience, but that's not to say it can't cause some problems down the road.
Our next guest says that as kids, twins are often expected to depend on each other for their emotional needs. And because of that, they often find difficulties later in life when it comes to balancing being a twin and being an individual.
Here to talk about some of these challenges and how twins can overcome them is Joan Friedman. She's a psychotherapist specializing in twin issues, and she's a twin herself and a mother of twins, by the way. Her new book is The Same But Different: How Twins Can Live, Love, and Learn to Be Individuals. Joan, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
In the past, you've written about kids and for parents of kids who are twins. The new book is about adult twins. Why focus on them?
Well, after I finished writing the first book, I got so many calls from adult twins who were saying, why can't you write something for us? You know, there really isn't anything targeted specifically for adult twins who are just going through sort of normal developmental challenges. So it was such a wonderful opportunity for me to do research and also to use some of my own experience to help write a book that I hope can help a lot of other adult twins navigate issues and challenges that come up for them.
You introduced me to a new phrase. I'm the father of twins myself, by the way.
Oh,
I had not encountered the concept of the twin mystique, or at least that phrase. What is that, and why is it a hurdle?
Well, I made the phrase, so that's possibly why you hadn't heard about it before. And for me, it means that most people idealize that it's being a twin is the best thing in the world. Lots of non-twins think that twins are lifelong telepathic friends forever, and they're never going to be alone, and they're always going to be taking care of one another. And while there are a lot of wonderful, mysterious, and magical parts of being a twin, I think the dark side of twinship oftentimes isn't discussed, because I've certainly had the experience myself. If someone comes up to me and says, oh, you have a twin, I go, uh-huh. Are you best friends? And I'll say, no, not really. We're sisters and we get along really well, but we're not best friends. And I can see their face just drop.
Oh,
they're
no.
So upset that I've burst their bubble. So my hope in writing the book was to let people know who have twins, live with twins, married to twins, that twins don't get along all the time, and it's not a bad thing. And actually, you can learn a lot from what doesn't go on well in your twinship and really develop into a healthier self.
You tell a lot of stories about twins in the book, and it seems like one of the basic problems is that a lot of them, the twins, have adopted that concept of the twin mystique. And when they don't get along or aren't best friends all their lives, they feel like they've failed or they're betraying their twin somehow.
That's exactly right. I can see you've gotten the grasp of the book. I'm so delighted. That is true. And the calls that I get are basically from the twin that's feeling successful, the twin that has a job or a boyfriend or she's, you know, achieved some wonderful thing in her life, can never feel good about her own success, because if her sister is not in that same place, let's say her sister is depressed, unemployed, and doesn't have a relationship, the twin who's happy is so guilt-ridden and feels like she's betraying her sister, and it's so sad that she's not able to be happy for herself and still feel that she's connected to her sister.
Should it really be that different from two non-twin siblings in that same situation?
You know, I'm often asked that question, and yes, I think there is a crucial difference. Growing up with a different age sibling, you automatically assume a lot is growing up. You know, you fight, yell, scream, but there is definitely differences that you get by being different ages. But same age siblings don't have that in that space in their relationship to be that open and that free and that maybe that argumentative. The twins have a much closer relationship because they're in each other's presence 24/7 for most of their lives until possibly they go to separate colleges. So it is very different. And they're also sharing everything. They're sharing supplies and mothers and fathers' attention and friends. And it's much more complicated.
We're talking about the issues facing twins, adult twins in particular, with psychotherapist Joan Friedman. Her new book is The Same But Different. We want to hear from you. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a twin, or maybe the parent or sibling of twins? What kind of challenges do you see? How do twins, in your experience as a twin or knowing them, balance their individuality with their status as a twin? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email, talk@WPR.org. Also, you can always post on the Central Time Facebook page, Central Time on WPR.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Cynthia Schuster.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking with Joan Friedman, author of The Same But Different, about the challenges of being a twin, especially an adult twin. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Are you a twin? How do you get along with your twin sibling? 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. We'll go straight to the phones. We've got Jenny on the line in Milwaukee. Jenny, hi.
Hi.
Now, what's your story?
I have identical twin daughters, and as they were growing up, they were very close. But at some point, you know, identical twins are completely different. One's very type A, very anal. The other's very laid back. And they separated at a point. They didn't want to be identical. And I think it kind of hurt both of their personalities and personas. And I'm just wondering if there's any way to get them back at this stage. They're both 26 right now.
All right. So can they rekindle that closeness they had? What do you think, Joan?
Oh, well, it's hard for me to make a professional pronouncement without a lot of details. But I guess I would have to sort of understand more about what the rift was about. And if you think as their mom that they have the communication skills and the capacity to talk through or work through their conflicts with one another.
Well, I don't think we need to get too deep into the details of this experience because, as you say, it's hard to diagnose things over the phone. But in general, when twins drift apart in life, what are the things that can bring them back together?
Well, I think if someone can articulate for both of them, maybe in the room, like the mom, for example, can sort of say, well, I know you're upset about this and I know you're upset about that, and let's sit down and try to talk about why the two of you haven't been able to get along lately. That's a possibility. Another thing is, you know, seeing a therapist. You know, lots of times twins are too afraid to talk to one another about their issues with each other because they've grown up and they haven't learned how to really manage conflict or ambivalent feelings between each other. So if one goes and can talk to someone about what's bothering her, it's possible that then she'll feel more comfortable eventually coming and talking to her twin about it.
So for parents of younger twins now, looking ahead to adulthood, are there things they can do to pave the way for maybe the inevitable conflict that's going to come at some point in their lives?
Well, you know, the inevitable conflict doesn't have to come, I believe, if parents of twins really try to provide separate experiences for each twin, you know, in an age-appropriate time. Like, you know, when they're littler, they can maybe go to different classes. Or later on, with our boys, we sent them to different day camps for a week. And then later on, when they were older, different night, you know, overnight camps. We tried at each stage of their development to let them have time away from one another so that they could be more resilient on their own without feeling as if they always had to have their twin around to help them with issues that they were not able to do themselves. And this is so important because if twins aren't equipped with that resiliency by the time they go to college, it makes the college experience so much more difficult.
We'll go back to our phones now at 800-642-1234. We've got Jake with us in Milwaukee. Hi there, Jake.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What did you want to ask about?
I was just going to comment on what she was saying, and I totally agree. Me and my twin brother, we had separate classes all through growing up, and our mom kind of let us explore what we were interested in, if it was sports. We ended up having a lot of same interests, but we were really prepared for adulthood. And I guess I went to a different college for a year. I went to the same college, and now I'm in grad school. Now, I moved to Arizona for a year, and I was totally fine being apart, but now we're back together, and, you know, we get along really great and can go to each other for whatever.
Interesting.
So just having that separation as kids, it really helped.
Thanks a lot for sharing
wonderful.
That, Jake. Yeah, good advice
great.
There, Joan.
I'm so happy I got a caller that agreed with me. How fortunate.
Well, is there an urge among parents of twins? I'll say when my girls were super young, I thought, oh, splitting them up when they go to kindergarten, what a horrible thing. But then by the time kindergarten came along, I thought, what a great idea. But is there that urge for parents to really keep them together, whatever, dress them the same, always do the same things, treat them as equally as possible no matter what?
Well, I think parents are a little bit more enlightened these days, hopefully, than when I was growing up. But parents do get completely invested in the twin mystique. And in a sense, I think they do because there's two reasons. One is it gives them a lot of attention and they feel special. And then number two, I think parents are often shut out of the twin relationship. And I think that's because parents don't realize that they have to work really hard to make an attachment to both of those twins so that the twin-to-twin attachment is not as important as the parent-to-twin attachment. But I think parents who don't realize that are often left out, and it seems to them that the twin relationship is the most important thing, and so it all gets embellished in ways that are oftentimes unhealthy.
So if you treat, whether we're talking about parents or a friend even, if you treat them as a unit instead of individuals, they're probably going to respond back as a unit in a way.
Absolutely right. Well said.
Mm-hmm. Something else you talk about in the book that I wanted to make sure we get to is you write about twins who had trouble forming relationships, whether romantic relationships or close friendships with people, mm-hmm. because there's that comparison, at least in some people's minds, between the closeness of that other relationship and the twin relationship they grew up with.
That's exactly right. And it's so funny because my twin and I, Jane and I, were never separated until we went to college. Jane went to University of Wisconsin, and I went to University of Michigan. And we ended up sort of unknowingly replicating our twin relationship with roommates. So Jane found this very bossy, extrovert woman roommate who I think was sort of a replica of me, and I found at the University of Michigan this very shy, introverted person that I was taking care of like I felt I was taking care of Jane. So in many ways, unconsciously, we replicated our twin-like relationship. And oftentimes, you know, when twins start to date, you know, twins are used to having a roommate, their roommate, that can read their thoughts, that there's instant intimacy. And then they all of a sudden have to go to college and, you know, live with someone who doesn't treat them like their twin did. So they have to learn a whole different way of relating and a kind of a whole way of dealing with intimacy. It was so funny. This lovely gentleman I interviewed said he was an identical twin, and he said, when I was in high school, I was like a superstar. Everyone knew who my brother and I were, and we were great. And then when I went to college and I was by myself, he said, I lost my superpowers. So he really had to find out on his own how to make intimate attachments because he really never had to do that before. And it happens often, too, with marriages that twins look for someone they can have instant intimacy with, and we all know that you have to learn how to communicate really well to have positive intimacy. So it can be an issue.
All right, time for one more caller. We've got John with us in Windsor. Hi, John.
Yeah, my mom is a twin. She's 82 years old, and she had another set of twins in her family. She's the youngest of 14, and it was real interesting watching my mother and her twin sister growing up. They married exactly opposites. My dad is a minister. My uncle was an army officer, but they had the same number of kids. My mom had three girls and one boy, and my uncle had three boys and one girl. So, but they separated for many years, and now they're in communication quite more often. And you know, it's really interesting. The whole family, they all had the same kind of characteristics. It wasn't really just the twins, but it was. What are your thoughts about kids of twins? Do you have any thoughts on how they're raised or anything?
Thanks for the call, John. Yeah, how did being a twin inform your parenting, maybe, Joan?
Well, I was so happy when I found out I was having twins because I felt I could raise my boys, who are now 25 years old, in a way that I wish Jane and I had been raised. And so it informed me a lot. And I made sure that I did three things with Johnny and David, which is we didn't tell them who was older. We made sure that we spent alone time with each of them. And when they were finally old enough to understand, I let them know that they were not able to go to the same college. So it informed me in many ways that I felt was important to help them develop their own individuality and their own separate selves.
Joan, in our last minute, can you leave us with maybe one key piece of advice for twins entering adulthood?
Well, maybe my advice would be more for people who know twins who are in adulthood, is to make sure you try to get to know them. Make sure that you don't expect them to, you know, be over the moon being a twin, and ask them about themselves and what's different about them and what their experience was like, and not to be disappointed or crestfallen if they tell you they're not best friends, because, you know, it's not the end of the world. It actually can be a good thing. It facilitates growth.
Joan, thank you so much for being with us today. Very interesting.
Thank you. It was a wonderful interview. I appreciate it.
That was Joan Friedman. She is a psychotherapist. She's worked with twins. She is a twin. She's the mother of twins. Her new book is The Same But Different: How Twins Can Live, Love, and Learn to Be Individuals.
Coming up after the news, a look at House Republicans and their ideas for immigration reform. I'm Cynthia Schuster, filling in for Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Remember, you can follow us on various forms of social media. On Twitter, we are Central Time WPR. On Facebook, Central Time on WPR. Stick around. There's more to come here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.